John Hanson here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. And my first guest, a frequent guest of Your Money Matters, which I host 6 p.m. Monday through Thursdays. On that program, Craig Bolanos has an incredible streak of 35 out of 36 appearances where the market was in the green. I won't count today against you, Craig Bolanos, here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thanks for hopping on with us, my friend. Boy, we're not having a great day, are we?
No, John, it's good to be with you. Although I did think when Roaring Kitty made his post about GameStop, everything was going to be in the green. Guess it didn't turn out to be that case for the broad Dow Jones Industrial Average this morning.
Yeah, that'll happen sometimes. You get a bump up, everyone's feeling good, and then it turns around for us lay people. What changes? Like, what is the motivation that changes? Is it algorithms? Hey, when something hits this number, sell it off? Is it data that's coming through? Or I guess each day is different.
Every day is different, but let's be sincere, John. The market moves faster than it ever has because it's no longer individuals. It's individuals and computers, right? And computerized trading and the algorithms that come with it, they just mow things down in the same way we quickly prop things up. And that's why people need to continue to focus on the intermediate to long term, because the intraday is, at the end of the day, an awful lot of noise.
It is, right? And I think we all, if you're listening to this program, you hear the numbers all the time. We mention them on the radio. They're important for a lot of people. But for those that are too tuned in, Craig, that's when you can kind of make mistakes, right? Sometimes the passive investors can win out.
Well, there's a big difference between trading and investing, right? I mean, they're interrelated, but they're two completely different skill sets. And what I really think people should remember now that we're through the month of May, and remember, some people were saying, oh, it's May, you got to sell in May and go away. Boy, that would have been a mistake, because John, the month of May was fantastic. I just want people to know that as far as I'm concerned at the Wealth Management Group, right now the economy and the market are fine despite some of the headlines, because the four core drivers of this rally are actually still in place.
I think some of the bright flashing yellow lights that people see, you know, where's the inflation the first couple of months, although we got a good reading for the PCE, the personal consumption expenditure report. I think I got that right, Craig.
You got it right.
Hey, we're learning, right? A couple of years hosting that show. I know what I'm saying now, kind of. Some people are pointing to like manufacturing and production, just these flashing yellow signs that maybe what buttresses up our economy, some of these big American companies are flashing yellow. Are you seeing that too?
Well, you know, let's break it down into both parts. So first, again, those four key issues: solid growth, falling inflation, expectations for a Fed rate cut, and continued tech stock strength. All of those are still comfortably in place. What I do acknowledge, though, my biggest concern is and always has been not the timing of those Fed rate cuts, but my concern is if we get an unexpected economic slowdown, that's where some of that manufacturing data, some of the consumer spending data from some of the key retailers that have reported, that's what I worry about. I worry about a growth shock. You know, that's an economic disruption that can go ahead and break this bull market rally. But right now, I continue to focus on the big four, and the big four: solid growth, falling inflation, expectations for a rate cut, and continued strength in tech means, hey, we're still in a good place to buy the dips.
That's Craig Bolanos. We're not done with him yet, but if you want to give him a call at 833-WMG-PLAN, he helps you see how your spending and your savings, your investing, all that impacts the money you need for retirement. And you can give him a call again at 833-WMG-PLAN. Craig, I know that they say, like, stay away in May, and it was a really good May. You explained that in the first segment. So I just want to preface my next question by saying, all past year indicators are no guarantee of future indicators, but just given, generally speaking, election years, Craig, what do they look like? What do they feel like as we go through the summer, fall, and into the post-election period?
Well, I mean, most certainly we know that once we get through the first debate, which is coming up pretty soon, John, and then once we get through convention thereafter, the political ads are going to dominate. You're not going to see drug ads on TV anymore. Whether that's good or not, I'm not sure. But what does that mean? It just means I think we're going to have some bigger pops and drops as we get closer to the election. That is very normal. But I think for investors, people would do wise to continue to focus on the economy first, earnings second, and the Fed third, because you can't make a decision on markets being good, bad, or indifferent just because of a presidential election cycle.
Yeah, I used this example on Your Money Matters once about someone that I know, and you could insert any political party or any president here, and it doesn't make a difference. Both sides run on fear and greed sometimes when the person they like or don't like wins the White House. But I know of someone who pulled out of the markets entirely for the second Obama term and for Joe Biden's term. And I ran the numbers recently, and I was shocked to find out that this person had cut their retirement in half by doing that. And I'm not saying that one party or the other. It's just, Craig, don't make your decisions on how you invest based on the person who's in the White House.
Do not trade based on those political confluences. No, absolutely not. You're going to do yourself a disservice. Now, it does make sense to be educated because fiscal policy, spending, and direction can lead and influence sectors in the market. But this idea of just because my person does or does not win is going to determine whether I do or do not invest, that's a false narrative, a false deity, and you're right. No one should chase that.
Right. And I should also say that if you weren't investing during President Trump's term, that was a huge mistake as the markets were way higher by the end of President Trump's term as well. That's why I was saying both parties. But just to put a finer point on that, Craig. So, Craig, we're looking here. We're moving forward. The vibe is what? I mean, it really seems data dependent right now, which I guess is how it should be. A lot of people aren't just trading with the optimism there. People want to see the numbers back it up.
No, you got to see the numbers back it up, you know, and our job, you know, on the noon business hour at the Wealth Management Group is just to continue to watch the macroeconomic data and the microeconomic results to determine when or if a slowdown is ultimately going to appear. But at this point in time, it doesn't yet register that people should be defensive. In the same way, I think if we kept it simple, everybody who's listening, pay attention. Do we continue to have growth, continue to have good news on inflation, expectations for a Fed rate cut, and strength in the technology sector? Look at NVIDIA again today. If the answer to those four is yes, then I think people can expect that the trend remains higher between now and the end of the year, albeit any opportunities probably should be met with a buy-the-dip mentality.
Last couple of years have been tough on a lot of families with inflation where it is. No doubt about that. In fact, we had a text. I want to read it here. They said the economy is fine for those who can afford it, which undoubtedly is true. I want to, though, compare like other countries, their stock market performances. Like you look at the UK and it flat for a while, maybe up 1% or so with GDP every now and then. Japan just got back to where they were in the 80s. What is America doing differently? Or is it false hope and optimism for why we, despite the mountains and valleys, have continued to chart this upward course?
Well, I think you have to look. There's a couple of pieces. I mean, number one, it's innovation leads to disruption, which is an investable theme. And if you think of how much innovation comes out of companies that are great American companies in North America, it is that innovation that leads to positive change, which leads to the economic power of every American citizen. And as long as we continue to have free markets and free people, I think you're going to continue to see a good backdrop for North America to potentially continue to outperform what would be emerging markets, what would be Europe and Far East up until that growth scare eventually gets here. It's just not here yet today. So, John, it's been a good story to have a North American-focused portfolio for many years, and I think it still is in June of 2024.
708 says, is bifurcation a legitimate concern? What I'm reading sounds like the bubble's about to burst this summer. Can you first explain what that is and your thoughts?
So we talk about this. First, I want to acknowledge what you said a moment ago, John. I recognize that there are people that this economy is working for, and those are people that have investments. And then those are people who are just launching into life, dealing with all of the increased costs. And that bifurcation between those who are doing so well and those who are struggling, yes, we need to find various cures for that. And that's why elections matter, and people should vote based on their economic and social morals that they hold dear. That being the case, as far as a bubble goes, no, I don't see stocks trading at 50 times earnings like previous bubbles. Do we acknowledge that valuations are very ripe, which means a whole lot of things have to continue to go right to have progress? Yes, of course that's the case, but that's why the people out there should build diversified portfolios so that their portfolios can take a stomach punch when inevitably some darker days rear their ugly heads.
Craig Milano said of a text, you're not going to answer it here, but someone wanted to know, I want to put my money into a vehicle that will earn 8 to 10% yearly return, but not an annuity. I have a diverse portfolio. Obviously, they can chat with you then. 8 to 10% guaranteed. I don't think there's a vehicle like that, Craig Milanos, but if there is, I guess you can tell the texter about it.
You know what, John? There are lots of vehicles that have historic compound annual growth rates of 8 to 10%. But if someone wants to get the consistency of returns in that level, then it's going to be something maybe in private markets, not just public markets, that might get it done. But that's a whole other discussion, a.k.a. the world of private credit, et cetera.
833-WMG-PLAN is where someone can call you and your team to talk about it. Craig, as always, it's a pleasure. We'll talk soon, okay?
John, great to be with you.
And we welcome on the line Mr. Jim Dahlke, the national editor, American Inno, ChicagoInno.com, where you can read all the stories we're about to talk about. Hello, Jim. Happy Monday.
Hey, John. Thanks so much for having me. Great to be here.
I love this story that you wrote about the difference in pay between engineers with AI skills and those without. Walk us through it.
Yeah, you know, AI has been the number one topic in tech over the last several years, looking at how artificial intelligence is going to disrupt business, the way work gets done, how it's going to impact your life, the amount of venture capital flowing into the space, the startups that are launching in and around artificial intelligence. Well, one interesting new quirk about artificial intelligence is exactly that. How much engineers who have those skills are getting paid compared to their teammates that don't have it? We looked at a new report from levels.fyi. This is a site that analyzes tech salaries, and they found that software engineers who specialize in artificial intelligence are really seeing a noticeable bump in pay compared to their coworkers who don't have AI skills. Entry-level engineers who specialize in AI earn about 6.5% more than their engineering teammates who don't work in AI or up the corporate ladder. You can find that gap widens a bit. Senior engineers at these companies who have AI skills are earning almost 11% more than their coworkers who don't have these AI skills. You can take a look at specific companies, too. Amazon, for example, engineers who have AI skills can earn about $50,000 or more per year than their non-AI counterparts for those who are in the senior AI engineering roles. And that goes for the same for companies like Cruise, which is a self-driving car company. And so really what we're seeing here is, hey, it pays to know AI.
Is there something to take away for the rest of us? I mean, I know you weren't studying other professions, but some people say AI is going to take away a lot of jobs. I hear other people say, no, people with AI skills will just be able to keep their jobs over people that don't have them and maybe make a little bit more out of the money. I think there's a lesson for all of us here, Jim.
I think so. I think you should definitely get familiar with it. And even if that's just kind of playing around with ChatGPT, I think it definitely pays to get yourself familiar with the new technology as it becomes available to you. You know, one headline that we saw, you know, several months ago was, you know, a big uptick in what's sort of called prompt engineers. So, you know, there's this idea that like people who really are good at creating AI prompts and kind of getting the results and answers from those prompts are going to be in demand at a lot of companies. And that doesn't necessarily take a bunch of highly technical skills, right? It's just kind of, you know, having a good grasp and understanding of how to utilize services like ChatGPT. So whether you're a super technical engineer or, you know, just, you know, somebody who's, you know, working at your business and trying to get a little more familiar with this, I think it's going to behoove all of us to get familiar with these new AI tools.
I love that about like learning how to prompt well. If you've ever used ChatGPT, it is a learning curve, and the questions you ask and how you frame it really does make a difference in the results you get back. For people that quite don't like grasp it, I liken it to like a social media person, their skills at knowing which hashtags are the ones that are trending and get the right movement on things, right? It's about knowing the how it works and how to exploit it for your benefit or your company's benefit.
Yeah, and it's just kind of getting those practice reps in, right? It seems a little confusing to start, but the more you kind of play with it, the more you get involved with it, the better it's going to be. You know, I'm actually a coach of my 3-year-old soccer team, and we use ChatGPT to help identify some drills that you should use for soccer practice, right? Because I've never coached a 3-year-old soccer team before, but hey, ChatGPT said, hey, here are a few different drills you can run with your 3-year-old team.
And what are they? I mean, you just asked ChatGPT, I'm coaching a 3-year-old soccer team. What should we do at practice?
Red light, green light. Everybody, you know, kicking a ball like an animal. You know, the bunch of different little kind of fun little games. And the answers were great. I mean, they were age appropriate for 3-year-olds. And the kids loved it.
I'm always wary to share this because I shared it last year and people were so upset, but I use ChatGPT sort of as like an exercise, but also legitimately to write my uncle's eulogy, who is a wonderful man. And I'm able to write eulogies. I've done plenty of them, but I put in some prompts about things that we did together, fishing together, this, that together. And it really spit out some interesting stuff. I didn't use it all. I picked what I thought was interesting. It'll liken the lessons of fishing to the lessons of life, which I think was in my heart, but I didn't know quite how to say it. And I found it to be an incredible useful tool to put into words things that I didn't quite know how to frame, Jim.
It's allowing us to be more editors than writers, right? So, like, you can use ChatGPT to kind of get the bare bones of what you're looking to put together, and then it allows the human to come over the top to really punch it up and really, you know, kind of save you some time. But also, it's not by any means taking away kind of the human element of you being able to kind of come over the top there and really make it, you know, that personalized piece of writing that you want. So, yeah, I think that's a really interesting use case.
Tell us about FreshX. They won a big award here locally.
Yeah, this is a startup that won first place at the University of Chicago's new Venture Challenge startup competition. This startup competition out of UChicago is really well known throughout the city. It's been going on for almost 30 years now, and it has been the startup competition that's launched some of the city's most known startups. So Grubhub was launched out of this business or a competition. Braintree, which is a payments technology company that acquired Venmo. This was a business that was born out of here and a handful of other companies that, you know, people across Chicago know. Foxtrot, for example, was a startup that launched out of this competition. So FreshX is the latest to win the top prize here. Got about $1 million for winning first place. FreshX is a supply chain software startup. I'm really specializing in cold chain transportation storage. So, hey, if you've got to move something that has to be temperature controlled, a FreshX can help you do that.
Well, hopefully they end up better than Foxtrot.
Yes. Well, that is, you know, part of startup life, right? You know, everybody sort of launches, raises a bunch of money, gets lots of recognition and growth. And then, you know, what happens from there is everybody's gift.
Okay, in like 30 seconds, tell us which of the top 100 influential companies come from our area.
Yeah, two Chicago companies on this list of the most influential at Time. One startup and one legacy company. The startup is LanzaJet. This is a company in Chicago that's just recently opened the world's first ethanol to sustainable aviation fuel plant. So essentially, they're turning ethanol into sustainable aviation fuel. This is a big initiative. The Biden administration set a goal in 2021 for the U.S. to produce 3 billion gallons of sustainable aviation fuel, and LanzaJet is really on the forefront of this from a startup perspective. And then United is the also the Chicago company on this list, and kind of for a similar reason, they are seeding greener fuel. They say they've invested in the production of about 5 billion gallons of sustainable aviation fuel, which is more than any other airline in the world.
Were you a little bummed out there was only two on the list from Chicago?
Yeah, you know what? I think that there's certainly an argument to be made that there's, you know, more representation to be had here in Chicago. Hey, maybe that's a coastal bias right there. Hey, there's a lot going on here in the Midwest that people need to have their eye on.
Those coastal elites. Well, you've got your eye on all of them. Jim Dahlke, national editor, ChicagoWinnow.com. Take care, okay?
Thanks, John.
All right. Let's go ahead and get our Wintrust Business Minute with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. A Chicago area medical waste company is being purchased by a powerhouse trash hauler. Waste Management is buying Bannockburn-based Stericycle for $7.2 billion and will acquire all of its outstanding shares and $1.4 billion in debt. It's one of the biggest ever acquisitions in the waste management sector. The deal comes after reports last month that Stericycle was considering a sale. Waste Management was founded in Chicago but moved to Houston in 1998 when it merged with USA Waste Services. This deal is expected to close in the fourth quarter of the year but needs regulatory approval and the approval of Stericycle's investors. Deere & Company says it will cut employees in global production and salaried workforce. Employees were sent an email last week about the coming cuts. Deere is facing declining demand and rising costs. The number of cuts hasn't been disclosed. They'll happen before the end of the third quarter in July. The Moline-based farm machinery maker and seller slashed its annual outlook earlier this year. Declining agriculture income has forced farmers to spend less on new equipment. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
All right, Gaynor Hall's got the business of food.
Jasmine and Danielle Neville say every coffee bean tells a story. And the history is a painful one.
Coffee really is this beverage that we all take for granted and that we've come to enjoy, but it's really rooted in exploitation of people, in slavery, and overconsumption of the environment.
First discovered in Ethiopia by the 17th century, the Dutch started profiting from coffee cultivation in colonies. As demand grew, colonial plantations spread from Southeast Asia to Central and South America and the Caribbean. The industry flourishing on the backs of enslaved people.
So we wanted to bring forward a coffee company that was more intentional and ethical.
The Nevilles launched Uncharted Coffee in November, inspired by their late mother.
And that's really where we started our ritual of coffee.
They traveled to coffee-producing regions around the world, ethically sourcing beans for their limited-run monthly drops. Working directly with the hardworking farmers at the heart of the labor-intensive process.
We have a very strict sourcing criteria for the types of farms we'll work with, which includes farmers who are practicing regenerative farming, who are being socially conscious and kind to their workers, so there's no child labor, there's no slavery. Also, farmers who are not over-consuming water or doing deforestation is really important to us.
They want to charter a new course, educating consumers about coffee's past and changing how we produce coffee in the future.
We think it's really important for people to understand where your product comes from, to have that radical transparency, which is something we're very proud of, so that you can understand from farm all the way to the cup at your kitchen table where your product comes from.
Gaynor Hall, WGN News.
Chicago still reeling from a lack of workers 4 years after the pandemic hollowed out U.S. cities. The downtown vacancy rate has been setting records quarter after quarter, recently rose to 22.5%. The perception of crime, they're not going away. The population in Chicago declined 3 years in a row. Not trying to paint too dark of a picture, but simply to say that getting people to come back has been hard. One of the ways companies are trying to get creative about that is to make the workplace simply feel, look, and have the vibe be better. And one of the companies that does that is KI. Jonathan Webb joins us now from KI, ahead of NeoCon 2024. Hello, Jonathan. Welcome to the program.
Good afternoon. How are you today?
I'm doing great. Thanks for joining us. How much difference does a vibe make with furniture, all those sorts of things?
Well, it makes a huge difference. You know, today's all about really trying to find your flow within the office. And for us and for our clients, we spend so much less time talking about the me spaces and so much more time talking about the we spaces. And those we spaces are intentionally designed for our clients and with our clients. And, you know, our goal is to drive interaction and engagement because we know it's been a few years of hard ways here. And, you know, I think we're reaching this inflection point with our economy and with downtowns, and I think Chicago's included in that, quite frankly. And organizations are just saying, you know what, we're better when we're all in the office together, but we have to make changes to the office to make sure that everybody is able to take advantage of the different work styles that they've wanted to become accustomed to over the last few years.
And what does that look like, feel like? Like, what's the trend? I know we've gone from cubicles to open desk plans to offices to, I mean, it changes year to year. What are people wanting now?
You know, it's really interesting. You know, back in 2019, I would say 95% of our clients were one-to-one, which means that they had one workstation dedicated for every employee. And we were a very workstation-heavy industry back then. And today, it's about how do we put spaces within workstations that people can move around and create engagement. So, you know, the growth of huddle areas meant for like 1 to 3 or 2 to 5 people, and to do so in a way that allows them to be connected via technology in the office and connected via technology with people that are outside of the office. The hybrid work environment is here to stay. It's not going to go away, I don't think, really ever, quite frankly. But we want to be able to ensure that we have that connectiveness when people are in the office with people that aren't necessarily in the office. So, you know, it's a lot of soft seating areas. It's a lot of meeting areas, conference tables. And it's a lot of smaller areas as well. You know, it's not like we have to have a conference room for 40 or 50 people anymore. That's a lot of wasted space these days.
Yeah.
And so we have to be able to create those spaces that accommodate smaller groups of individuals that are working on projects together.
Chatting with Jonathan Webb from KI. I see what you mean. First of all, a lot of people aren't in the office 5 days a week, so not everyone needs a desk. That's a lot of space, too. These collaborative workspaces are probably also made available by, I don't know, how many people still have a desktop computer at their workspace? For a lot of people, it's the laptop that they're moving around already.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we all became video conference experts overnight, right? And and so the movement from a desktop-based workplace to a laptop-based workplace is certainly evident with a lot of our clients. And it's always a challenge for IT to make sure that we have the assets that we need when we do come in the office and we need to park and we need to focus and get work done. But we're more mobile than ever these days when it comes to technology. So just having the ability to adapt to those mobile technologies is really important. And furniture does play a big role in that. We have to be able to provide that connectivity, whether it's just access to power, being able to plug in and tether to the lines that give us internet. Those are all considerations that we talk about with our clients every single day.
Do you guys also work on the fun aspects of offices too?
The what aspects? I'm
fun.
Sorry.
No, it's fine. Fun. Like, so many places have a break room that has X, Y, or Z in it. Stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, the amenities these days that we talk about are huge. You know, for a lot of clients, you know, branding is really a big part of getting people excited to come back into the office. So we see a lot of interesting pops of color that effectively are representing the brand of a company. But, you know, we'll do a lot of really unique and fun work surface shapes, a lot of color up on the walls, a lot of acoustics. Boy, you know, the office has become louder as it's really amazing. We all learn how to talk normally on the phone like we do today and like I am right now. But you get 2 or 3 people on a video conference call and for some reason we start screaming at each other. So, you know, acoustics play a huge role in terms of those amenity spaces as well and trying to soften all of that echo and all that noise that is kind of around us every single day.
NeoCon 2024 is next weekend. No, this weekend at Merchandise Marker next week. In 30 seconds.
Starts on Monday, a week from today.
And there you go. What are you looking for? I mean, do you guys scope out the competition or have a friendly look at what other people are offering?
Yeah, we get a chance to walk around to the different showrooms. You know, it's such a big industry, right? You know, it's like $17 billion. It's become a little bit commoditized over the years. Yeah, it's huge. But it, you know, for me, and this is my, I think this is my 25th consecutive NeoCon. It's really about connecting with my colleagues across the industry and seeing what they're up to, maintaining that connectivity with the people that, you know, they, we compete against them, but they're all friends. So it's a wonderful time to get together. We of course go and look at their new widgets, and if they have a new chair or a new soft seating series, boy, we want to test that out and you know, see what everything looks like and feels like and play with new materials and different fabrics. So it's just a ton of fun. I enjoy it every single year.
I can tell you're passionate about it. Jonathan Webb, we appreciate your time. Take care. We'll talk soon, okay?
Thank you so much.
Jonathan Webb from KIKI.com to look more at what they're doing.